Professor Nicola.
Do not touch that ball.
Professor Nicola. Professor Nicola Spurrier, good morning.
Good morning.
Can I just ask you first up, how's your son reacted to having to get up at 8:15 on Sunday morning? How's that gone?
He's all right. He'll manage.
He doesn't know about it yet, did?
So I'm just wondering, 8:15, that means probably getting him out of bed at about 7 a.m. Now, we've all dealt with teenagers before, so good luck with that.
No, actually, I have to say that he and his mates have all been saying we all want to get vaccinated.
Ah.
So he's telling me, yeah, these people in his class have already booked in, so that's always good news.
Well, good on you, Professor. Now, 80%, is that 80% of everyone who's eligible, i.e. everyone over the age of 12, or is it over the age of 16, or is it all adults? What's 80%?
Well, I think what the most important thing to say is taking a specific number in medicine is probably the wrong thing to do. We shouldn't be so black and white about it. What we do need to do is protect as many people as possible in our community, because the disease is going to get here. It'll either come before we get to that percent through a leak through Victoria or New South Wales, but
yep.
I'm hoping we get as many people as possible, and it may even be more than 80%,
yep.
and then we let the disease in a controlled way.
Yep.
Now, from my lens in population health, it's got to be equitable. There's no point having 100% in some of our more wealthy suburbs, but then having 20 or 30% in areas in South Australia where there's people living in disadvantage, because
yep.
it will
Spot
mean
on.
We have lots of people getting sick. So mm-hmm. we've got to look at the equity lens as well.
But is yep. that where this sort of, I'll call it a backflip, it may not be a backflip, or what Stephen Marshall was talking about, that we're not going to definitely guarantee opening up if we have 80% because of this, the difference in vaccinations. Are you already experiencing that some suburbs, some areas are not getting vaccinated to the levels that you're happy with?
Look, I think we needed to expect that in the beginning, and the Doherty model was very upfront saying that it hadn't taken into account the geographic spread or the demographics of people. It was, you know, when you do a mathematical model, you have to make a series of assumptions. So I don't think this is a backflip at all. It's just being really pragmatic about thinking about the safe and well-being of people in our community, and we have to think about everybody. And you can say, oh, look, we've got all these mass vaccination clinics. You can go to your GP. Everyone should be able to get vaccinated. But there's many people that live quite difficult lives. They might have mental health problems. You know, they've got lots of other things going on in their lives, and it's not so easy just to say, go and get a booking. So mm-hmm. the thing that we're really focusing on in the next 2 months here in SA Health is working with communities, working through communities, through local government, to really make sure that everybody in South Australia has had that opportunity to be vaccinated.
But in other states or countries, young or old or male or female or rich, or poor, or what that aren't getting vaccinated? Is there a certain group that are?
Yeah, yeah, and it's the same with other health services. So we know that people that are less wealthy have less opportunity, haven't had those educational opportunities, are less likely to go and avail themselves to these sorts of preventative health services. And in this instance, it's absolutely critical that everybody is able to access this life-saving vaccine. And also you have to look at different languages as well. You can see in New South Wales and Victoria, the communities that have really struggled and where there's been high infection rates and high death rates as well are those sorts of areas where there might be newly arrived migrants, people with a different cultural background. So even language gets in the way of understanding how you protect yourself from COVID. And it's not through any fault of those groups or communities. It's simply that we have to make sure that as a society, we support everybody to get vaccinated.
Professor Spurrier, you've already mentioned in this chat that the disease will come here, whether it's through New South Wales or Victoria. So once we get to this 80% target, I mentioned to the Premier the other day, there's still 20% that won't be vaccinated. I think that's still a large number, and I don't want to be an alarmist here, but I am concerned, though, that with people just coming in all of a sudden from New South Wales and Victoria, are we opening ourselves up to a bit of an issue here?
So again, it, rather than say we just open the borders and everybody comes in, we obviously review the situation at the time, and there'll be some rules about who comes in and a requirement to have testing done. Some people may need to quarantine and the like. But the thing with COVID is we have to be realistic. We can't keep ourselves in a bubble forever, and we now have vaccination, so we need to be looking at how we can use vaccination to move towards at least a little bit more of a normal lifestyle. The other thing I just wanted to say quickly was we have vaccination, but we actually have three strong pillars of control here. We certainly have vaccination, but we also have public health restrictions, which people are aware of, including masks, density requirements, caps and the like. And then we've also got the contact tracing. So the thing my team in here is doing at the moment is looking at automating as many processes as possible, because we still need, and if you look at the Doherty model, you still need all of those three things. You need the contact tracing and the quarantining and isolation of people that come in contact with case. So you've got all of those three things. It's not just vaccination, but obviously the more people are vaccinated, then the less you need of the other two things.
People dancing at weddings, people dancing at pubs, people dancing at nightclubs. It's a big issue. It sounds like there's not going to be any change in South Australia for a few months. They're dancing in Western Australia. They're dancing in the Northern Territory. They're dancing in Queensland. Why are we so strict on dancing, and why are we so strict on sit-down drinking compared to stand-up drinking? It's killing a lot of businesses out there.
Yeah. So those are some of the behaviours, apart from the number of people. But we know, because we've had lots of experience with this disease now, that the dancing, particularly combined with alcohol and the standing up and consuming and the mingling, means that you're coming in contact, a much closer contact, with large numbers of people. Now, we're very close borders with New South Wales and Victoria, where there are large outbreaks. So until I'm feeling comfortable, and that we're feeling comfortable as a community, that everybody is protected, that everybody's had a chance to get vaccinated, those sorts of behavioural risks are a bit of a way off for us here. Now, that's not to say I might be thinking about dusting off my dancing shoes. I was thinking I might go and even learn to do salsa or something just to have a bit of fun in the meantime. Doesn't mean you can't dance. It's just that we are restricting those activities in the larger indoor, unventilated group activities.
I think you can sense it, Professor, that Rue's a very frustrated dancer. I think
I'm a frustrated publican.
But anyway.
Well, thank you. We love it when you come on. You explain it very, very well. And as we always say, Professor, you're doing a fantastic job. So thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Professor Nicola Spurrier.